You must not hold it against them. Children should be very understanding of grown-ups. But of course, those of us who understand life couldn't care less about numbers. I should have liked to begin this story like a fairy tale. I should have liked to say, "Once upon a time, there was a little prince who lived on a planet hardly any bigger than he was, and who needed a friend." For those who understand life, that would sound much truer. The fact is, I don't want my book to be taken lightly. Telling these memories is so painful for me. It's already been 6 years since my friend went away, taking his sheep with him. If I try to describe him here, it's so I won't forget him. It's sad to forget a friend. Not everyone has had a friend. And I might become like the grown-ups, who are no longer interested in anything but numbers. Which is still another reason why I've bought a box of paints and some pencils. It's hard to go back to drawing at my age, when you've never made any attempts since the one of a boa from inside and the one of a boa from outside at the age of 6. I'll certainly try to make my portraits as true to life as possible. But I'm not entirely sure of succeeding. One drawing works, and the next no longer bears any resemblance. And I'm a little off on his height, too. In this one, the little prince is too tall, and here he's too short. And I'm uncertain about the colour of his suit. So I grope in one direction and another as best I can. In the end, I'm sure to get certain more important details all wrong. But here you'll have to forgive me. My friend never explained anything. Perhaps he thought I was like himself. But I, unfortunately, cannot see a sheep through the sides of a crate. I may be a little like the grown-ups. I must have grown old. Chapter 5. Every day I'd learn something about the little prince's planet, about his departure, about his journey. It would come quite gradually in the course of his remarks. This was how I learned on the third day about the drama of the baobabs. This time, too, I had the sheep to thank, for suddenly the little prince asked me a question, as if overcome by a grave doubt.
"Isn't it true that sheep eat bushes?"
"Yes, that's right."
"Ah, I'm glad."
I didn't understand why it was so important that sheep should eat bushes, but the little prince added,
"And therefore they eat baobabs too."
I pointed out to the little prince that baobabs are not bushes but trees as tall as churches, and that even if he took a whole herd of elephants back to his planet, that herd couldn't finish off a single baobab. The idea of a herd of elephants made the little prince laugh.
"We'd have to pile them on top of one another."
But he observed perceptively,
"Before they grow big, baobabs start out by being little."
"True enough. But why do you want your sheep to eat little baobabs?" He answered,
"Oh, come on. You know."
As if we were talking about something quite obvious. And I was forced to make a great mental effort to understand this problem all by myself. And, in fact, on the little prince's planet, there were, as on all planets, good plants and bad plants. The good plants come from good seeds and the bad plants from bad seeds. But the seeds are invisible. They sleep in the secrecy of the ground until one of them decides to wake up. Then it stretches and begins to sprout, quite timidly at first, a charming, harmless little twig reaching toward the sun. If it's a radish seed or a rosebush seed, you can let it sprout all it likes. But if it's the seed of a bad plant, you must pull the plant up right away, as soon as you can recognize it. As it happens, there were terrible seeds on the little prince's planet. Baobab seeds. The planet's soil was infested with them. Now if you attend to a baobab too late, you can never get rid of it again. It overgrows the whole planet. Its roots pierce right through. And if the planet is too small, and if there are too many baobabs, they make it burst into pieces.
It's a question of discipline, the little prince told me later on. When you've finished washing and dressing each morning, you must tend your planet. You must be sure you pull up the baobabs regularly, as soon as you can tell them apart from the rose bushes, which they closely resemble when they're very young. It's very tedious work, but very easy.
And one day he advised me to do my best to make a beautiful drawing for the edification of the children where I live.
If they travel someday, he told me, it could be useful to them. Sometimes there's no harm in postponing your work until later. But with baobabs, it's always a catastrophe. I knew one planet that was inhabited by a lazy man. He had neglected 3 bushes.
So, following the little prince's instructions, I have drawn that planet. I don't much like assuming the tone of a moralist, but the danger of baobabs is so little recognized, and the risks run by anyone who might get lost on an asteroid are so considerable, that for once I am making an exception to my habitual reserve. I say, children, watch out for baobabs. It's to warn my friends of a danger of which they, like myself, have long been unaware, that I worked so hard on this drawing. The lesson I'm teaching is worth the trouble. You may be asking, why are there no other drawings in this book as big as the drawing of the baobabs? There's a simple answer. I tried, but I couldn't manage it. When I drew the baobabs, I was inspired by a sense of urgency. Chapter 6. O little prince, gradually this was how I came to understand your sad little life. For a long time your only entertainment was the pleasure of sunsets. I learned this new detail on the morning of the 4th day, when you told me,
I really like sunsets. Let's go look at one now.
But we have to wait.
What for?
For the sun to set. At first you seemed quite surprised, and then you laughed at yourself. And you said to me,
I think I'm still at home.